The Wintrust Business Lunch, Dow Jones Industrial Average up 49 points so far today. We'll check in with John Najarian from CNBC, talk to him about all things Wall Street, probably the Walgreens news with Rite Aid as well coming up. And the VIX, we were following the VIX during President Trump's address earlier today to the United Nations. It didn't look like it did much, so we'll get John's take on that coming up on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Andrew Herman is here on most Tuesdays to talk about openings and closings, and well, we're going to talk waffles today as well. So that's coming up with Andrew Herman. As I said earlier, a little bit about Cork, and also Mike Aldrich, who's the owner of Vam Fas. Have you been there yet? It's a shop in Naperville. Apparently they sell only European foods, and he's doing well there, so well that they're going to open up a second store, so we'll talk to him about that. But we start on Tuesdays with John Najarian, a contributor at CNBC, the co-founder of Najarian Family Offices, and he joins us on a phone line now. John, welcome back to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Well, it's my pleasure. Thank you, Stephen.
Hey, so I just was saying earlier that people were watching the VIX during the president's address to the UN, where he referred to the Rocket Man, and it didn't do too much. The VIX didn't change all that much, so I don't know if they just sort of have gotten used to the president's rhetoric, but we've got that, the president's address going in today. They were looking at that at the markets, and the Fed meeting, which starts today as well. What are you seeing?
Well, I'm out here in Laguna, California at the Institutional Investor Conference on Family Offices.
Oh, interesting.
And it's my, I get to chair it this year, so that's a fun time. We've had a lot of great speakers and so forth, and it's some of the largest family offices in the world that are out here. So they're asking a lot of the same kind of.
Yeah, what does that mean, family offices? You mean family run or for investors of families, or what does a family office mean?
So a family office is usually a wealthy patriarch, matriarch, whatever, sets aside a chunk of money that then they allocate to hedge funds, private equity, venture capital, real estate, you name it. Sometimes it's run by a member of the family, like in our case, Pete and I, or other times they outsource all of that to a manager. And this is about, I'd say, 50-50 split out here. But the family offices run from, I think the smallest one out here is 300 million, and some of them run into the billions, and they're the names of, you know, the companies that we all grew up with, basically,
right.
You know, whether it's Exxon or whatever. But to your point about Mr. Trump, I thought it was incredible that the president of the United States, not that he called the North Korean leader Kim Jong-un the Rocket Man, but when he said, if he steps out of line, it's going to be necessary for us to completely destroy North Korea. And he used that phrase, completely destroy. And as you just said, Stephen, and for your audience, the volatility didn't budge.
So
the market didn't budge. The market is just on this course, upward trajectory, and even statements like that have not had any effect on the market.
Okay, does that speak to the strength of the market, or does that speak to the fact that they're used to language like that from this president, and that he and they don't think he puts as much weight behind his own words as other people might?
Both.
Yeah.
I believe it is both, and I think also we just had a gentleman, Steve Hayes, from the Weekly Standard, the editor-in-chief of the Weekly Standard, present out here, and he said that, you know, it is his belief anyway, and a number of folks that are in the Washington and the Beltway area that report about the president and White House goings-on, that the other policies just hadn't worked. You know, basically the last three decades, you know, through multi-term presidents, Clinton, Bush, and Obama, they hadn't done anything about Iran or about North Korea. It was more or less appeasement, if you will. And he said, now people are talking tough. Does it mean anything's going to happen? Probably not. But he says it's a change in tone, and the market seems to like it. That's one interpretation anyway.
All right. Well, you know, I mean, even Steve Bannon said on a sort of exit interview that there's not too much we can do about North Korea. We can talk about it. We can negotiate. But the fact is that there's not much of a military option there.
True. And I believe that, that some of the only military options available to us are illegal in our present system, and that would be, you know, some sort of
cyber attack,
surgical, surgical takeout of the leader himself through SEAL teams or other ways, perhaps. But I believe that is prohibited within our Constitution, that we kill a foreign leader through an assassination sort of thing. But I gotta believe that if you say all options are on the table, certainly that would have to be one of the options, legal or illegal. But let's talk about other stuff,
yeah,
Stephen.
Let's, it looks
like I say, the markets aren't worried about that right now.
I mean, pick your merger today. We got Walgreens and Rite Aid. We've got maybe T-Mobile and Sprint. We've got Bob Evans and Post. It's a day of mixed marriages.
Yeah, and more to come. Definitely more to come of that, I believe, after the hurricane destruction and so forth. There will be others that will be, of course, in the insurance space that will be forced to merge. But I was focused on the T-Mobile because we had a lot of unusual activity in there. I did get an email today. You'll chuckle about this, Stephen, from a member of the House in the United States that wanted my data about Equifax because of the unusual trading in that stock prior to they announced, of course, that big breach.
Right.
But there was trading for a month. They knew about it a month before they told us. And all of that played out and erased $6 or $7 billion in market cap from that particular stock. So there'll be more on that story in the coming weeks.
I mean, that will be huge. Once they find out that those people were trading on that information, that could be that's unbelievably huge.
Yeah, and these were at least one of the people that allegedly, I'll use that term so I don't get sued, allegedly trading on that insider information was in the C-suite, meaning, you know, CEO, CIO, or CTO, somebody in that high up in the company doing something so nefarious would be pretty bad for Equifax.
We'll watch that.
I know shares have reflected that.
You're busy in California today, but what are you looking at today?
Well, outside of the T-Mobile Sprint deal, which we were on and still are in that one, knock on wood, Freeport, FCX, and it's probably, again, a rebuilding play, not necessarily infrastructure, although this is part of that, but if you're rebuilding, a lot of the things that Freeport takes out of the ground go into buildings, and there's a lot of upside speculation in that name. We were buying that for clients today.
John Najarian, great to talk to you. Enjoy your conference in California. And what, you got a year now running this joint?
A year now?
No. What did you say you're the chair of this council for the upcoming year?
Oh, no. I'm just the chair for this event. Investor brought me in as a hired gun to talk about the markets and to host the conference.
I didn't mean to obligate you for the whole year there. I'm sorry about that.
Oh. If they wanted to and they brought me to places like this, Stephen, I'd do it.
We'll talk again next week, all right?
Thank you, sir.
Andrew Herman is here, an editor at DNA Info Chicago, and talks about what's opening and closing, and it's all about waffles.
Well, this week I have brought in a little story about Chicago waffles. They're at 1400 South Michigan, and they're opening their second location now at 1104 West Madison Street, kind of continuing this waffle craze that we've been seeing in restaurants for the last couple years.
Interesting guy, right? He lives in Buffalo Grove. I think his family runs a deli, and then he opens up this place, 1400 South Michigan. When his son gets out of high school, he's going to move into the city.
Yeah.
Like so many couples, empty nester couples do, and maybe open up a few more.
Yeah. So I was looking at his menu. There's a waffle flight, which is four different kinds of waffles, including red velvet for $13.95, something called a short rib cheddar waffle.
I could do that.
Yeah. Cinnamon roll waffle with sliced apples and caramel sauce. That sounds great.
So waffles in the West Loop.
Mm-hmm.
I've got to have the salty, not the sweet.
Okay.
I'll never do a sweet breakfast.
I was looking at some waffle offerings around the country. Just a couple of them look good. In New York City, they sell something called an igloo, which is a ice cream and waffle street food.
Nice.
In L.A., they have a thing at this place called Alfred Coffee, in which they serve you coffee inside a coffee cup made out of a waffle.
That would not work, my friend.
It's coated with chocolate.
Wow, really?
Yeah, I think you have to drink it pretty fast.
It's got to be a little cup.
Yeah.
It's a demi-tasse, maybe.
Yeah, and then, of course, there's the famous Waffle Houses that you have to go to.
And the chicken and waffles.
Chicken and waffles, right?
All right.
Soul food.
Enough
yummy
food. I want to talk office space.
Okay.
So also in West Loop, there's this Fulton Market office being built.
Yeah.
Kind of a cool, what, nine-story building?
Yeah, so, you know, we got a lot of great architecture in Chicago and downtown in the neighborhoods, but I got to say, I think this is one of the cooler office buildings
beautiful.
I've seen. 375 North Morgan. Hard to describe, but it's sort of a tiered building. It gets wider at the bottom, you know, smaller at the top. And so you have these office spaces, and they each have a terrace on each floor, an outdoor terrace that's landscaped. So there's trees and bushes and grass. So basically, each floor has its own private park.
That's nice.
Yeah.
And it's being built. It's being built without tenants, but the idea is that area right now is so hot that it doesn't matter.
Yeah, right. You know, it's kind of being driven by Google and McDonald's headquarters. And our reporter was talking to real estate experts around there, and they were talking about how important adding a Morgan L-stop 5 years ago on the Green Line was. It really helped
things take off. Even though it requires
off.
A transfer from the loop, people
yeah,
are still doing
right.
it. Okay, I want to go into my Wayback Machine.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say 1979 to 83 or 84,
mm-hmm.
and we're walking around the loop, and you can buy boom boxes and wigs,
yeah.
and there are abandoned movie theaters,
yes,
right? And that's
right.
about it. The loop was kind of desolate.
Yeah,
I'm wondering with, you know, with Amazon, not that that's so far from done deal, but if that's going to come up to the north side, you've got this West Loop, you've got Google in Northwest Loop area.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if downtown could be in for a challenging time. I mean, will we relocate sort of our hub?
I don't see any evidence of that. As you know, just looking out the windows of the studio here, there's cranes everywhere.
Yeah.
But Blair Kamen of the Tribune has sort of looked at what he calls the super loop, and it's how it's growing. And it's growing west, and it's growing north, and there doesn't seem to be an end for the demand. One of the real estate experts was telling our reporter that they expect the office space to double in the West Loop in the next 3 years.
It almost has the feeling like the parents live downtown and the hip kid businesses are just outside the loop a little bit.
Well, you know, if you get some sort of mass transit out there, like they have, and you can take buses from the metro stations downtown, it's just really opened it up. But you'll recall when we were kids and you'd be going out to the Chicago Stadium, you'd get off
Nothing.
The expressway
right.
and be like, just don't stop until you get to the stadium.
Right.
And now it's just wall-to-wall offices and homes and restaurants, and it's just really a big booming area.
I mean, nothing is permanent, and that's just, we'll watch that. Andrew Herman, thanks
okay.
for coming by. Read more at dnainfo.com/Chicago. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. The Dow Jones Industrial Average up 41 points so far on this Tuesday. All right, maybe you've had a full career in, let's say, HR, and you want to try something new. You're shopping around, and you think, I'm going to open up a store. That's what Mike Aldrich did. He joins us now in the Allstate Showcase studio. Mike, welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
All right, so you decided you just wanted to go into retail, or how did this work?
I don't think anybody who's sane says, I'm just going to go into retail.
Right.
I was looking for a change. I had been in a lot of corporate roles and had kind of leadership responsibilities for HR, had some life changes and thought, okay, I'm tired of having a boss. I'm going to come up with a way to do something on my own. And that was kind of the start of the process.
And the idea was maybe that you would start your own sort of store operation, and you ran into this chain, Vom Foss.
Correct. We were up in Madison, Wisconsin, and I was looking at the building for its architecture, and my wife was looking at it for the fact that they were having a wine, cheese, and chocolate tasting.
Your wife is smarter than you are, Mike.
Always. And so we came back, had a great time at the tasting, and then saw that they were looking for franchise partners and had no one in the Chicago area. So that was 2 years ago in July, and that's when the process started.
And you just kind of jumped on that?
Looked at it pretty hard, pretty quickly, yeah.
First store opened up in Naperville last year?
Last November, correct.
And what is Vom Foss? Tell me about the store.
Vom Foss means from the cask or from the tap in German, and it is a culinary wine and spirit shop. So we have fruit vinegars that we make in Germany. We have really great extra virgin olive oils and nut and seed oils that are made in France. We have wine, and then we have a whole selection of absinthe, liqueurs, gin, rum, vodka, grappa, cognac, brandy, all kinds of fun things.
So more liquor than food or mixture?
It's probably, I would say, the The volume probably works out to about 65% food.
Okay.
But the price points for the liquor are higher, so revenue-wise, they're probably even with each other.
Well, what I read about the store is that you can try everything before you buy it, so I just might go hang out at your shop next Saturday.
A lot of people like to do that, yes.
What is that about? People can sample the vinegars?
Yeah, you can sample actually on both sides of the store, so you can taste a liqueur or taste a whiskey if you want to have a try at that. That's governed by various state rules, so there are limits to that. But if you want to taste oil and vinegar, you can do that all day.
From the cask, does that mean you just sort of tap the cask and fill up bottles?
We cannot fill bottles on the liquor side. Again, ATF rules.
I was thinking of the oils. Yeah, right.
But the oils, definitely. When you come in, we'll help you find your way to a product you like. Then you decide how much of it you want, what kind of bottle you like. We fill it, we seal it, we mark it for you.
You mentioned absinthe. I want to ask you about that because I remember somewhere, if you go to New Orleans, everything's named the Absinthe Cafe or whatever, but I thought I read somewhere that absinthe was banned in the U.S.
And it was banned until 2007.
Why was it banned or why was it lifted?
Because there's an ingredient in absinthe that is allegedly a hallucinogen, but it's in there at such a tiny percentage that you're probably never going to get to hallucinate. But there were various restrictions. There are still countries around the world that restrict absinthe. But since 2007, it's been legal in the U.S. We carry it, and it's actually a very popular product.
All right, so you've been at this now, all told, maybe a couple of years, but on the floor less than a year.
I have nearly 10 months of retail experience.
How's it feel?
It's a lot of fun. It really is. It's a very engaged sale. The customers we have had a great time. They bring friends in. They bring relatives in.
And I'm thinking you spend a lot of time in the store.
Absolutely.
Okay, and so it's very an individual sales. You're opening another store in Lincoln Square.
We are.
When? Do you have a date?
Or? We're hoping for mid-November, assuming everything lines up appropriately.
Okay, so that's going to stretch you a little more thinly.
Absolutely.
Or how do you manage that? Or I guess you have to find someone with whom you have great faith to run the other
Absolutely.
Store.
I have a great manager who runs a store in Naperville. His name is also Mike. Anyone really good is named Mike.
Almost.
And I'll be starting the hiring process for Lincoln Square soon. But it is critical to have people you can be confident in, and especially in the retail environment, because that tends to be a little bit more flighty.
You have to be able to let go yourself, too.
Which is kind of like leaving your child with a babysitter the first time.
Yeah, I used to interview a lot of writers, and you know, whenever a novelist has a successful book, they always say, "Well, are they going to make a movie of it?" And the idea is, you know, once you let go of that, it's torture for
the author. It's out of your hands. Yeah,
but this will still be in your hands. Big your responsibility, but you're going to have to delegate and let someone else run it.
Yes, and there's a lot of time, a lot of training, a lot of. I'm not going to just let it go. We're going to spend a lot of time together before you earn that responsibility.
All right. I would imagine you won't need Google Maps to find the two stores.
Me personally? No.
No.
I'm like a homing pigeon right now. I could go from one to the other with my eyes closed.
What's the difference between opening a store in Naperville and opening a store in the city of Chicago?
Naperville, there was no appropriate liquor license category when we started there. So we had to really work through a whole process, and the city was great help. But when people hear, like you did, that, gee, you can sample alcohol in here,
right.
They have an idea in their head about what it is versus the reality of what it is. And we have to get them to the reality so that they're comfortable with how that's going to work. The city of Chicago has been really helpful. Their small business center has been hugely helpful as we've worked our way through the process. At this point, we have what they call a conditional license approval. There are some inspections and other things to do before we get to the finish line, but great help and great support in that process.
So you said you opened in November. I would imagine
Black Friday.
I was just going to say, I would imagine that for a store like yours, that sounds like a lot of gift opportunities.
There are a lot of gift opportunities, and that's what a lot of people see is it's higher-end products, it's specialty kind of things.
So you opened on the day where you probably were rolling downhill 90 miles an hour from the get-go.
Well, it was, I remember we had a little bit of problem with our point-of-sale system, so we were getting that worked out. We were due to open at 11. I don't think we opened until about 20 after 11. And then it was just like drinking from a fire hose.
Right.
It was a pile of people, and I'm sitting there thinking, boy, we better know what we're doing because they're here.
What was the longer part of the day for you, after you opened to close or from 11 to 11:20?
11 to 11:20 was I was pulling my hair out.
Mike Aldrich is the man behind Vom Foss in Naperville and soon to be in Lincoln Square. Thanks for coming by.
It was great to be here.
I wish you great success. The Dow Jones Industrial Average up 47 points so far this afternoon. All right, how do you like your wine? Do you like it red or white, rosé? How about the top? A cork, a screw cap, maybe one of those new synthetic corks? Well, cork exports from Portugal had been suffering from years, but they are back. In fact, back at the peak of 15 years ago. We are going to take a moment now to talk to Peter Weber, the executive director of the Cork Quality Council. The Cork Quality Council. Peter, welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Hi, Steve. Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
So is the hardest part of your job saying that correctly, the Cork Quality Council?
Well, it's not hard for me, but I'm used to it.
You know, it's amazing to me because I've read about the screw caps, and I've read that many in the wine industry say that this is the way to go, that there's not much quality lost with the screw cap. So cork is kind of fighting back, right? Saying that not only is the quality preserved, that it's good for the environment to use a cork. Explain that for me.
Well, it is good for the environment because the cork comes directly from the bark of trees. It's very renewable. They're important trees as well because they grow in the Mediterranean area in fairly dry areas, and they're basically responsible for keeping the desert from spreading further than it already has in parts of North Africa and also parts of Europe.
They say the carbon sink for cork, 4.8 million tons of CO2 each year. So the cork forest are able to take that in and turn it into oxygen.
Correct. And when they take the bark off the tree, it grows back in 10 years, and so there's another crop. It's almost like shearing a sheep or something.
Tell me a little bit about that. So how old are these cork trees, and how often can you harvest them?
Well, it sort of depends on how thick the bark is. In most places, it's actually 9 years in between cycles. Generally, a tree has to be 40 years old before you can get quality cork that you would make a wine cork out of, but these trees can easily live to be well over 250 years old. So some of them are very impressive. It's sometimes interesting to think that some of these corks go back to past the Civil War, to the Revolutionary Wars.
It is amazing. And so I think the industry, the cork in the U.S. is at 70% of the wine industry. Is that correct?
That's about right. I mean, I usually track the top 100 brands, and probably last time I looked, 72% of those wines were finished in cork.
And then what comes next, screw cap or the synthetic?
Yeah, in this country, the synthetics are larger than the screw caps.
Okay.
So that gap is narrowing.
Can you make the argument that cork is better for the quality of wine?
Well, I do all the time, it really comes down to a couple things. And the most important is oxygen. People say the cork breathes. Well, it kind of does. I mean, when you put a cork into a wine bottle, it starts out being about an inch wide, and you squeeze it to about 3/4 of an inch to insert it in the wine bottle. And there's millions of little cells holding air inside that cork. And what they do is slowly release some of the oxygen just because the pressure is built up so high when you squeeze the cork. So you get a small amount of oxygen, and when that oxygen goes into the wine, it stops. The people who make screw caps, for instance, some of the screw caps really completely eliminate any oxygen transfer.
I'm sorry, I didn't interrupt, but so tell me if you're at 72% now, from what I understand, that's a return or growth a little bit. What was the highest level of the screw cap synthetics when they were at their height?
Well, I think when I started looking, I guess in February 2010, on case sales, the combination of screw caps and synthetics were about 51% of the volume.
No kidding.
And made a good comeback.
All right, so you're winning here. You've won the battle. Maybe you haven't won the battle, but you're leading on the battlefield. China is a big market. It's an expanding market being introduced to your product, and I understand there's a real fight there.
Well, I haven't really paid too much attention in the past year, but I know that a couple of years ago the Chinese had really shown a preference for cork to the extent that the Australian wineries were bottling wines for China in cork instead of screw caps, where they were, which is what they were using everywhere else.
Peter Weber, the executive director of the Cork Quality Council. I learned a lot. I appreciate you joining us today. Thank you very much.
My pleasure. Thank you very much.
And it just sounds better when the cork pops out of the bottle, doesn't it?
It does.